Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast, the podcast that is dedicated towards bridging the divide between the police and the communities that they serve. I want to thank you all for tuning in, for coming along, for downloading, for liking, subscribing, and for sharing. Thank you so much. And I want to encourage you to continue to do that. Please make sure that you're sharing this podcast, that you're subscribing, and that you are giving it the good thumbs up and rating it highly. Thank you so much in advance of your support. Remember, you can help to support the podcast through Venmo, PayPal, Cash App. All of those are CPTL Hunter, Lawrence Hunter, CPTL Hunter on PayPal. Remember, we have a Patreon page, Captain Hunter's Podcast on Patreon. And so those are the ways that you can help to support the podcast. Make sure that this information keeps going and flowing towards you, the listener. Make sure that you are following me on Facebook, Captain Hunter's Podcast on Facebook, CPTL Hunter on Twitter, CPTL Hunter on Twitter, CPTL Hunter on Instagram. Those are my social media accounts, so make sure that you are following me and going along with us as we take this journey together. Got a great episode for you today. In this episode, I'm not exactly sure who's actually interviewing who. I had a great time talking to a couple of ladies from the Fruit Loops podcast. Fruit Loops Serial Killers of Color is the name of the podcast. I heard of them, as I'll explain in the episode, as a member of a podcasting group on Facebook that I'm a member of. Heard about them and took a listen, enjoyed what I heard, enjoyed their comedy, their energy. And I know people may say, how much comedy can you have when you talk about serial killers? But they certainly have a way about them that makes it seem more palatable and more easy to listen to, as they have a great energy about them. So I wanted to kind of feature them on the show, and they were so kind and gracious enough to come on the podcast. And we had really, really had a great time talking. And Wendy and Beth are their names, and they came on the podcast and answered a few questions. And next thing I know, they turned the questions on me, and I had to answer their questions about law enforcement. And I'd appreciated that, because it showed that they were willing to have the conversation. So many times I've reached out to people and they don't want to talk to police officers. I would assume that many people don't want to talk to police officers, but I appreciate them for coming on the show, willing and wanting to have that conversation and ask those tough questions of officers or former officers, and ask them why they do what you do. And, you know, how do you feel when this happens? And how did you feel as a black officer and all that kind of stuff? So it was a great, great time, as you'll get to hear in a few moments here. So just a little bit about the Fruit Loops Serial Killers of Color podcast. It's a weekly podcast where two true crime enthusiasts bring you stories about people of color who rarely get media coverage, bringing diversity to the true crime conversation. So once again, they have great energy about them. You can listen to their podcast either on the web or on iTunes or Stitcher, or, you know, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure that you're tuning in and listening to them. So just give them a listen. And once again, you know, subscribe to their podcast and become a listener to what they got going on. So we're going to talk to Wendy and Beth in just a minute here. But before we get into it, during the conversation, you will hear us talk about when I was an instructor at the police academy, and I would teach a class called Human Behavior. Essentially, it was psychology. There were two experiments, psychological experiments, that we talked about, that I would bring up to the class as I was teaching. The first one is the Stanford Prison Experiment. Just do a little reading up on that. Maybe I'll do a show on that at some point. And the other one that I could not think of the name while we were recording was called the Stanley Milgram Experiment. And Stanley Milgram's experiment had to do with Stanley Milgram was a psychologist studying students at Yale University and seeing how far these students would be pushed or allow themselves to be pushed when they thought that an authority was telling them to perform a certain task. And it turns out in most of the cases, 60% of the time, 60 to 70 or even 80% of the time, people will follow directions when they believe that an authority figure, i.e. a police officer or a doctor or a teacher or a politician or whatever, they would do something that is against their own moral code because they rationalize it because an authority, someone they see as in a position of authority, is telling them to do that. And I talked about this with my students when I taught human behavior, because I wanted them to be that small percentage of 25% or so of people who would not follow directions if it was a bad direction, right? I taught this class when I was a supervisor. I was a lieutenant and captain when I taught this class. And I did not want officers to blindly follow directions and orders if they were illegal and unlawful. I know it's difficult. I know it's hard. But that was the reason and the point that I talked about the Stanley Milgram experiment. Stanford Prison Experiment, I also talked about. Stanford Prison Experiment talked about how far people will go when they have a position of authority. And people, we found out through that particular experiment, the Stanford Prison Experiment, that if you give people authority, then they will act with that authority and they will become abusive in their authority. So that was the reason I talked about those two particular experiments, because I didn't want people to become, I didn't want new officers to become abusive because they had this sense of authority. And when pushed by a senior officer or by a supervisor to do something immoral and or illegal, I wanted them to be those type of people that would stand up and not go for that kind of stuff. So I could not think of the name of it during the episode. So now you know. So here we go. Here's the episode, Wendy and Beth, Fruit Loops Serial Killers of Color podcast. So thank you to Wendy and Beth for being on Captain Hunter's podcast. I truly am honored to have a couple of Fruit Loops on, and thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. We're really happy to be here.
Well, thank you. I got turned on to you guys' podcast because I'm a member of the podcast group on Facebook, and they were kind of going over different podcasts that people listen to. And so your podcast came up. One of the people in the group said that they followed you guys' Fruit Loops podcast. I'm like, what the heck is this? So I clicked on it, and
yeah, you and many others.
Yeah, so I clicked on it, and you guys' energy is great and fantastic. So I decided to reach out, and I'm so glad you guys came on the show.
Well, oh, really happy to be here. Yeah.
Yeah, we are honored. So thank you. Thank you, Captain Lawrence Hunter.
Wendy and I are going to have some conversations, I can see, because I've understood, and I'll get into this a little bit later, that you have a problem with the police, which I get. So why don't we just start off right here? Let's start off on a friendly note here. Why don't you guys tell us about yourself, Wendy and Beth?
You go ahead, Wendy.
Okay, so I'm Wendy Williams, and I'm a African American Latinx first generation woman of color, member of the LGBTQ community. I check a lot of boxes. I'm also a mother of two kids, and I host a podcast with my homegirl Beth, who's the best white lady in the game, and we started off falling in love with podcasts, and that's sort of how we connected. And then we fell in love. We noticed that we loved true crime, and we noticed that there weren't any at the time we started weren't any true crime podcasts about people of color. And at first I thought there were no such thing as serial killers who were not straight cisgender white dudes, but Beth, the OG of true crime, was like, oh no, they exist. And I was like, well, how come there aren't any podcasts about them? And we were like, screw it, let's just do it ourselves. So that's how Fruit Loops came about. It's a play on words. We have fun talking about true crime. We don't take ourselves seriously at all. And we just try to tell stories. There's a lot of nuance that comes with people of color all across the world. And white supremacy is something that we get into. We talk about the history, because it does, context is everything. And so we try to get into the nuance of the story, not just the victims and the crimes. So.
Yeah, we actually thought of doing this podcast, like Wendy said, because we couldn't find another podcast that was talking about people of color, and we didn't know why. And I found an article on Psychology Today that said that there weren't a lot of stories out there because people weren't that interested in stories about people of color, the victims. Mm-hmm. And that I found really offensive, and mm-hmm. Wendy did too, I think.
Oh yes.
And so we wanted to put those stories out there.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Lawrence.
I'm offended as well. So you guys talked about a little bit about white supremacy. I mean, did the article talk about why that is? I mean, just people just aren't interested, or?
People love a story about a beautiful white girl, usually. It didn't really talk a whole lot about why, but that's what
we know
public,
why.
Yeah, we, the news is racist.
No secret.
The secret is definitely out on that one. Huh?
Yeah.
So, Beth, you are a white woman, and obviously, you said that you were offended.
Yes.
You were offended by this article. So what offended you about it, and what made you decide to hook up with Wendy and try to get on this podcast that talked about black people, people of color, and crimes and things like that?
Well, I just find it offensive when people don't want to dismiss a whole race of people saying they're not interested in their stories. It's just offensive to me. And I would not have started this podcast by myself, for sure, because I don't have the experience that Wendy has. Being a white person, I just don't know that much about what it's like to be a person of color. And so Wendy is the
resident expert.
Yes, the expert on that. Yeah.
But Beth, I always say she's the OG of true crime because she's been studying like true crime and psychology just like as a hobby for decades. And I've been a black woman for decades. And so we just, the power.
For a long time now.
Powers together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Let's talk a little bit about the true crime aspect of it. Now, I got to be honest with you. I was not very much into true crime. As a police officer, I live true crime almost every day, right? I go to work and that's what we're dealing with all the time. So I did not come home and want to turn on a podcast or whatever into it. So how did you guys each get into true crime and what made you so fascinated by it?
I'll let Beth go first.
Okay. Well, the first true crime book I ever read was Helter Skelter about Charles Manson, and I just thought it was fascinating. And I read a lot of true crime books like Anne Rule and stuff like that. I just found it fascinating, and I've never been able to really figure out exactly why. I think it's because I don't understand it, and I'm trying to understand it, and I've come to the realization that I'll never understand it, but that doesn't take away the fascination. So I think that's what it is for me. What about you, Wendy?
I just love the gory details, and I just love blood and guts. And I have always like watched Dateline and stuff like that, and been into crimes and stories and stuff like that. But once the 2016 was a pivotal moment in my life, I think in many people's lives. And I had been listening at the time to a lot of political podcasts. And come November 2016, I was just done with them because they all deceived me. And so I just started diving into true crime. And I just couldn't get enough of these stories. And I was trying to like stump Beth, like, have you heard of this case? Have you heard of this case? Have you heard of that case? And she had like heard of all of them. I just became obsessed. So I've been obsessed ever since.
I tell a story. Well, I don't actually talk about this story very much. So one day we were working, and I worked the midnight shift for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And somebody had brought in a serial killer book, well, a book about serial killers that lived in, I think, England in the 1800s, 1900s or so.
Was it Jack the Ripper?
No, it was about a number of serial killers. It was Jack the Ripper. It was other ones. So we would call it the front desk, right? The booking desk, essentially. So I'm reading it, and I read it one night, read it the next night, and like the third night in, I read a chapter or so, and I started having nightmares. I'm like, oh, this is enough of this. go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say there was one book, and I can't remember what the name of it was, but it was by one of the FBI profilers. It wasn't John Douglas. It was a different one. And it was getting into the psychology. And I read that one, and I couldn't read true crime for like a year after that. It bothered me so much because they went into their heads, and it was really disturbing. So I know what you mean. Yeah, sometimes it can get to be too much.
Yeah, some of these stories can be kind of disturbing, but
pretty scary.
For the most part, I just think they're fascinating. Also, I'm pretty open about this on our show, but I struggle with anxiety and depression and stuff. And I don't know, sometimes hearing about really, really bad things happening to other people sometimes is a relief to me. Like, you know, that's really dark, but at least my throat hasn't been slashed. You know what I mean?
Man, I really feel bad about today. Oh, geez, there's a car accident over there.
At least you didn't get murdered.
At least you didn't get murdered today. Yeah.
I guess there's always a bright side of every train wreck.
Exactly. Sorry to take it there, but that's facts.
Well, I guess that's true.
My truth.
Well, thank you for being honest. So with all this that you guys are doing, and you're reading about the stories about and how police are finding people, and you talk us through that, and it's a really great job what you guys do on your show about explaining, you know, the background, the history of the people, the settings, and all that kind of stuff. But let's get into the law enforcement aspect of it, as to you know, you guys are reading these stories about how the police are catching people, but yet, Wendy, you have a problem with police officers.
I do, and it's mostly out of fear. I am very terrified of police officers. I find them to be predatory and dangerous to communities of color. And as the mother of a young Black boy, I am terrified every day. and so my disturbance or uneasiness with law enforcement is mostly out of fear. I've never met a nice police officer. I avoid them at all costs, like the plague.
You have now.
So. Yes. Yeah, you're the nicest one ever. I've never talked to a nice police officer before. Oh my God. I'm going to mark this day on my calendar.
Now you can't say that anymore, Wendy.
I can't say that. But I do. As a Black police officer, I want to know how you reconcile with communities that look like you, their fear of you, and how do we bridge that gap?
I didn't pay you to say that. That's my tagline, and I do struggle with that. That is not an easy thing for me. It never has been. I joined in 1995, and growing up, I grew up in Waterbury, Connecticut. Fairly.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, and fairly, fairly inner city type of environment. And so I definitely understand what people say and what people see. And I understand the police have not always been our friends, you know, but it has been a struggle. It is a struggle, and I'm trying to understand it. Now, I never had any negative interactions with police officers growing up. I did see them from time to time interact with other, you know, Black people, Puerto Rican people, people of color, whatever. But it never was much of a turnoff to me, and they never did anything to me. Now, I had obviously other male role models in my life who were fairly positive. So I did not get a negative interaction, right? I grew up in a church, and my pastor, preacher, whatever, did not talk negatively about police. My uncles did not talk negatively about police. And so I didn't get that negative feelings about it. Obviously, everybody jokes about in high school and all that kind of stuff, you know, the police do this, the police do that, they beat people and this, that, and the other. And I certainly heard those stories. I never witnessed it myself. So when I became a police officer, I saw the fear that was in people's eyes. I saw a look of relief when I showed up on the scene. A lot of times when a Black person or Black officer shows up to in a group of people, I saw it when I was a supervisor a lot of times when, you know, things seemed to be going awry. And then as a supervisor, as a sergeant, and then as a lieutenant, I would show up and I can see a look of relief on people's faces. They want to, number one, people want to speak to the supervisor. Number two, they want to speak to, obviously, someone who looks like them. So I get it. I get the fear and the terror that goes through some people's hearts and minds. And how do we bridge that gap? That's a really tough question. I'm working on it every day. That's why I started this podcast. It's about talking to people, talking about the police, talking about what you should do, what, and why I say you, I mean the police, what the police should do and what you as Joe Public should do and how to interact and everything like that. So everyone can go home safely. And so we cannot have these interactions. Contrary to popular belief, I know that we, with the advent of cell phone cameras, we see a lot of negative interactions. But I do believe that the vast majority of police officers really have a good heart. Now, through time, through experience, they get jaded. They become negative, and that's all true, very much so. But that does not mean that the vast majority of the police officers are bad or negative or whatever. There's a lot of negative that comes out with a lot of scandals that have gone on. In LA, they had the Rampart scandal. We had Rodney King, just a recent scandal that has been going on in Baltimore about these police officers who are selling drugs, stealing drugs, planting drugs, and things like that. And the case in Baltimore is really really interesting because if you look at the mugshots of the police officers who have been arrested, half of them or more than half of them are Black officers. So this problem that goes with being a police officer, there is a problem with white officers who don't understand Black people and then go into communities and then, you know, abuse people. But as we can see in Baltimore, even Chicago and other places, you know, it's not isolated to white officers. The Black officers are now participating in this as well. So there is a power dynamic that goes along with this. And I talk about that. I actually taught a class called human behavior. When I taught human behavior, I talked about not only how police officers should interact with people when they go into a scene, right? Because a police officer is walking into a scene in which people are being devastated, right? They lost a loved one. It's been a bad car accident. You're taking people's kids away, all that kind of stuff. And so there's a human reaction. So I want police officers to be prepared for that type of human interaction. But I always left the class and I talked about a very famous psychological experiment that was done in the 1960s. I forget the guy's name right now. Anyway, the purpose of that experiment was to show how much people will listen to authority. It was actually done in Yale University.
The Stanford experiment?
Well, that was done in Stanford. Those are two experiments I do talk about. I do talk about the Stanford experiment, which is very powerful. I do talk about that. I always leave the class when I talk about those two experiments. The first one, yes, it's the Stanford experiment. And the other one, it's killing me. It was done in Yale, New Haven. And when people put on, and essentially both of these experiments talk about when people get this power about them, they will be corrupted, right? Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I always leave my officers with that mindset that don't become corrupted, don't become part of the problem, and don't become part of the situation. And let me just finish with this. I understand that, you know, particularly with white officers, right? There's the FBI back in 2006 released a report talking about how white supremacist groups would try to infiltrate the police and
recruit them.
Right. And the police and the military, right? And we see this going on. Just the other day, there was this whole white power thing at the Army Navy game. I don't know if you guys heard about that.
Oh, I saw it.
Yeah. So this is going on. So this is going on. Even a couple of years ago, there was this situation in the Air Force Academy where they were spray painting on the walls and all that kind of stuff. These are college students who have grown up to a certain level and certain degree. So my point is that I get it. It's pervasive. It's everywhere. And how to bridge that gap? It's an uphill battle, but it's one I'm worth trying to fight.
What are your thoughts on abolishing police?
Oh man, I do think that police need a major overhaul, a system reboot. We understand that police officers or policing in this country, and I talked about this in a number of episodes. Please go back to and listen. I'm talking to the audience now. Please go back and listen to the previous episode. I talk about this in a number of episodes where the police in this country have been founded in slave catching and
thank you.
And they have been founded in protection of the property of rich people, right? That was going on in the North, right? So we were protecting the property in the North. And in the South, again, they're protecting property, right? So this is the problem that we have. So these systems need to be overhauled and need to be rebooted. I think rather than abolishing the police, I think that we should have some type of system. What I think is we need is a federalized authority. If you look at other countries comparable to the U.S., you know, first world countries, they have a centralized system of policing, right? And that's what we need here. I believe you guys are in Arizona, right? You guys are in Arizona. The laws could be completely different. So I live in Connecticut. I actually went to Arizona once. So I can get
on the point. Still in Connecticut?
Yeah. Well, I'll be moving soon. So. So I get on the plane. As a resident of Connecticut, I'm used to the laws and practices here. I get on the plane. I go to Arizona. And some of the things can be completely different. I then get on another plane. I think, Wendy, you grew up in Washington, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
So I actually my son was stationed at an Air Force base in Washington. So I went to go see him over the summer. So I can get on a plane, go see my son or see your family in Washington and have a completely set of rules and regulations. Now, there are some standards. Yes, there are some nationalized standards, court rulings and things like that. But that is a problem. That is a huge, huge problem where we can go to different parts of the country and things are done so differently. Just today, I read an article in the Chicago Tribune about how the new coming superintendent or chief of police in Chicago is changing their promotional system.
Okay.
So that's actually a problem where in Chicago, it takes certain, they would call it a merit system, right? The merit-based system to them is, and I'm hoping I'm saying this right, is that the more proactive and more productive that you are, then that goes into your opportunities to being promoted. Here in Connecticut, or at least in my department, and many other departments that I've sat on promotional panels for, it's all based on a test, right? So there's a written test and then there's an oral performance, oral board type of test. So think about how unfair that is. So I can be tested based on my aptitude, right? Here in Connecticut, I'm testing on my aptitude, my ability to speak, my ability to take a written test and all that kind of stuff. Where in Chicago and other places, it all depends on why or how productive you are, how many motor vehicle stops. Exactly. And that's why we get so many corrupt police officers, because I want to move up the ranks. So what do I got to do? Oh, I got to get all these drug busts. What do I got to do?
Arrest more people.
I got to arrest more people. And that is a serious problem. So I think abolishing the police, I don't know. But I do think we need a very major system overhaul.
Okay. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I agree.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that. I fucks with that idea. Am I allowed to swear on here? Sorry, I did already.
It's all right.
So I listened to an episode where you talked about, I think you were talking with another police officer about how people of color are not really interested in becoming police officers.
Correct, yes.
I listened to that episode too. What do we do?
Yeah, how do you think we can get more people interested in getting on the police force?
Yeah, so that's part of the changing the problems and the perceptions. When I became a police officer, many of my friends, obviously the majority of them were Black, were like, oh, how can you do that job? And they would ask me what it was like, and I would tell them, listen, I enjoyed it, and I really did. I enjoyed doing what we were doing, but all they thought of was that I was chasing people down and beating them up.
Right.
So
were you?
I was not. I was not. I certainly chased people down, but and I used the correct amount of force. but I think the conversations like this need to happen because people need to be upfront and need to be honest about what goes on. Number one, and number two, I think that people need to understand that what you see on TV is not always the way that it is, and that there are good police officers out there who are not abusing and using their authority to negative levels. So how do we change? How do I change that perception? Listen, I don't know. It is an uphill battle. I talk to people. I was part of my recruitment team. I went to colleges. I went to schools. I went to churches. I went to barbershops and talked to people. And then they all had the same mindset. My son is in his early 20s now, and many of his friends who were kind of, even though my son is in the Air Force, some of his friends, you know, they may be going to community college or working a job and everything like that. Fairly positive people, right? No criminal records and all that. And I would talk to them and ask them to be, you know, consider taking the test. And they weren't interested either. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. And I know that I certainly did not present a negative image of law enforcement. So this is a problem that we have to have, and it's a problem that needs to change. It really does need to change. I talked
I don't see anything changing without more people of color in the police force.
Listen, it's only going to get worse if people think that that it's problematic now. With the police officers who are out there, imagine if there's less police officers, and we've been given a great opportunity, right? Before we understand the shackles were on black officers, they only would allow one or two officers. The police officers, if you were black, were not allowed to arrest white people, and all this kind of crazy stuff.
Right, right.
Now we're chiefs of police and all that kind of stuff. If we decide not to, the young generation decides not to become police officers or firefighters or enter into the military, what do you think is going to happen? It's just going to get worse.
That resonates.
And so I'm trying to change that mindset. So
what do you do as a black officer when you see a white officer doing some fuck shit, like saying the N-word, unnecessary force? Pursuing black people in a predatory fashion when white people are doing the same stuff, you're in Connecticut, so there's probably a lot of fancy white people over there doing the same stuff over in their neighborhood. So what do you do when you see wrongdoing in the department? And are you even able to speak up as a black officer? Like, or is your career going to be ruined? And then the problem never gets better. Even though there are more black officers, we're there, but we can't say anything. So,
So that's a really good question and a really tough question. I got to say, and I'm really going to be honest with you, I never saw that. I saw that one time when. I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious. I saw it.
Were you a police officer for one day? How long were you on the force?
I was on for 24 years. there was a day when I don't think that they knew that I was actually there. And so it was a big kind of fight that was going on outside. A number of people, a number of officers showed up, and I heard this guy call one of the persons who was under arrest the N-word. So I'm walking around the corner, and of course the guy sitting down, he's looking at me. I'm looking at the officer, and I can see the officer drop his head. And so a little bit later, the officer did apologize to the guy, and then he came up to me and apologized. We're still actually fairly cool to this day, but listen, I understand.
That wasn't the first time he said that.
I'm not ignorant or naive in saying that it doesn't happen. When I talked about working at the booking desk. When I was a supervisor at the booking desk, people would constantly come in and say, this officer called me the N-word. This officer did this, this did that. And I would give him, we had a complaint form. I said, okay, listen, give me a complaint form. Do you have the guy's name? Do you have his badge number? Do you have his card number? Things like that. And a lot of times they wouldn't have it. They wouldn't know. Okay, describe the officer. What did he look like? What street were you on? That way I can try to isolate this kind of stuff. And one of the biggest frustrations is that people don't complain, or they don't have this information, or they won't tell me what street it was on. And they would say things like, I'll just forget it. You guys ain't going to do anything anyway. I'm like, well, listen, you got to tell me. I'm standing here just like you are, man to man. Tell me what happened, and I'll deal with the situation. And a lot of times they wouldn't fill out the form. We had a policy where even if someone doesn't want to fill out the form, we still had to investigate. So I would still look into it to the best of my ability. But as far as people doing things that they weren't, going into certain neighborhoods, targeting people, I never saw that.
A couple things that are kind of wild about policing in the United States is the recourse that officers have. Like in some police departments, complaints are not released to the public. In other departments, after a year, any complaints that they had or wrongdoings on their record are erased. In some jurisdictions, you're not allowed to file a complaint against a police officer. So there's all these, like, you're right, there should be. I think my dream is to abolish police. But if we do an overhaul, I do agree that a federalized system that is uniform and just is definitely in order. But I mean, I am just so frustrated by policing. And I out of fear, again, tell my children to be careful around the police, because as Black people, they are, for some reason, they're just afraid of us. And I don't understand why police are so afraid of a Black body and can treat it with such disregard, either by shooting it. You know, remember that pool, the video of the Black girls at the pool party, and the police officer just slammed that girl on the ground for no reason. I mean, like that are just, why you wouldn't, nobody would do that to a white teenager. There's also the we've talked about on our show, the adultization of kids of color. And once a Black or brown kid reaches, a boy reaches age 5, they're looked at as not children anymore. And that whatever bad things come their way or happen to them are entirely their fault. Tamir Rice was 12 years old and he was playing with a toy gun in a park, and the police came up, and within 3 seconds, that little boy was dead. So I can't get those things out of my mind. And I wonder what you do when you see the news and see there's been so many examples of just how wrong policing in the United States is. What do you do? What do you tell your friends? How do you explain yourself?
Yeah. listen, this is a tough conversation. In 1997, I believe that was the year of Amadou Diallo. So
you remember this one, Beth? 42 gunshots, and the man was just digging in his wallet to get his identification in front of his own goddamn house.
Yeah. So I got a lot of phone calls about that. I was on the job for 2 years, and I got to try to explain this. And I'm going down the road of what I was told about use of force and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, people weren't buying it, and I don't know if I was buying it. And that actually kind of started me on my journey about reading a little bit more, exploring a little bit more. Well, why this? Why that? So I saw the same pool party video that you saw that was down in Texas. The more recent one with the doll, that was down in Phoenix, right? With the dollar store.
The dollar store.
Yeah. So listen, I'm just as hurt by that.
That was nuts. Yeah.
Tamir Rice, all this kind of stuff is really, really devastating, and I don't have explanations for it. Only thing I can do is try to change it. As far as yes, I agree with you. The looking at children who are above the age, I think psychologically it's like age 8. They stop seeing them as whatever.
It's different for boys and girls.
Right.
So girls, it's I think it's 8, and boys it's 5.
Right. So this is a problem, and so we have a serious problem. And this is not a policing problem. This is a cultural problem, right? This is a United States problem. The same type of things that we're talking about happen in doctor's offices, in prescribing of medications, right? They give more medications to white people than they do to Black people.
White women.
Right. And so the same thing happens in schools, in how they suspend people and disciplinary procedures. So this is a problem that needs to be addressed across the board. And there has not been a racial reckoning in this country for a number of reasons. That is too far for me to explain. And this problem that we're talking about is really just a cultural United States problem that we really need to look in the mirror and say, this is the problem. But I think,
that's a good point.
I think a bigger problem is one that Beth could answer, is why does this persist? Now, I'm not asking you to speak for all white people, obviously. What's going on? Well, you said that you guys said that in an episode the other day. Don't you know him or something like that? I heard that. So, you know, why does this happen? Why? And the police are just a symptom of this problem. And at one time they were the gatekeepers of white society, keeping the others away and keeping them in their place. That's changing slowly, but it's too slow.
I think part of the problem that I see is that a lot of white people don't think that there's a problem. They don't. They think that racism is solved
Yeah. Barack Obama, it's all good.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's solved now. So why do you keep talking about this? Because everything's good now.
Yeah.
They don't understand. They don't see. And there's a lot of things that I didn't understand until we started this podcast and had a lot of discussions. We just don't talk about it in white society. You know, we're like, oh, racism is solved. So, but it's not. So, I think having more discussions and sharing this information is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We're doing the Lord's work over at Fruit Loops. But yeah,
we're doing what we can.
Yeah. And having conversations, I think is the easiest way to start. And we always say on our show that it's a safe space. Like me or Beth might not always say the right things or have the right language to talk about this problem of, really racism. In the United States, racism, xenophobia, and all that stuff. At least we're trying. So it's a start.
Yeah. And I was pretty nervous about doing a podcast about people of color, because I was afraid I would say something offensive. And, Wendy said, call our podcast a safe space, and just talk. And I think a lot of people are nervous about talking about race, like even talking about race might be racist, you know?
Yeah. Like when somebody's like, he's African American, and they say it like really pronounced, like they don't want to say it wrong. You know what I mean? They could just say,
they look away or they say it really quiet. You know? Like just saying it is racist.
Yeah. It's not. You gotta talk about it. Tell the truth. Say with your chest.
Yeah. I think that's the only way is to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I definitely agree that there's a lot of white people who don't think that there is a problem. I did talk to one guy. His name is Michael Bell. It's a previous episode. And he said, you know, he was an Air Force colonel. I think he was actually a major at the time. And so he said, and he admitted this during the interview, he said, when I saw these things on the TV and read them, bought them in the newspapers, I thought the black community was exaggerating. I thought that they were just whatever. And it wasn't until it had come to his house, into his home, right? The police in Kenosha, Wisconsin had killed his son, and there was a big cover up. And so he thought it was something that only happened in one particular community. And so when he saw it firsthand, when it came to his house, then he understood that there is a serious problem with policing. And it's very unfortunate that so many people don't think that there is a problem, think that everything's okay, that certain people are just whining or complaining, or they need to get their stuff together or stop committing so many crimes or whatever they think, you know, and stop being, as Wendy said, you know, targeted or overly policed and all that kind of stuff.
And I think a lot of people don't. I was just going to say a lot of people don't look at things like that unless something happens to them, unless they're impacted in some way. Yeah, and that's unfortunate, too.
Yeah. I think that's human nature, though. I was talking to a dude. He's a rich white guy. And he was like so excited because he went on a ride along with police. And I was like, you got in a police car on purpose and roll around with him all day? Like, it was baffling to me. But he was so excited. He got to put on a bulletproof vest and ride around with him all day and like go into a crime scenes and stuff. I was just like, oh my, like, to me that sounds very dangerous, because you might not get out of that car or ever go home again from my vantage point. So I just thought that was really strange. And again, I think white people and people of color look at police very differently. Like Beth probably can attest to this. Like if something bad happens to you, your first thought is, call 911.
Call 911. Like, yeah.
I gotta get the Annies over here. I gotta call the pastor. I think of calling so many other people first before the police. Because it could, because if I get shot, whoever called the police ought to be on trial for, accessory to murder in my opinion. But having this conversation with you makes me a little less fearful. Like, I have a little bit of hope that there's a way for things to improve. And maybe by just having these conversations, we can all get there.
I think that the police need to take this first step forward. And that what I would suggest, if there's any other officers listening and or chiefs of police, I think the first thing that they need to do is develop those community relationships. We had a PAL.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
We had a PAL program, Police Activity League, in which I coached for a while. Police officers need to go to churches, go to parks, and not just run people's names, but go there, shoot hoops with the kids, and just interact with them so they can get to see a different side of the police, and so they can build that community trust within them. And I think that's the first and most important step that we can take. Without this police reform and all that, without the abolishing the police, just get to know people on a one-on-one basis. And I think that would alleviate a lot of fear, right? This fear that we talked about, where it's seemingly that white officers have this fear of black people. It may not even be a fear, but it's just this disregard of black bodies, if we can call it that, right? So, so they can get over that and see, man, this kid over here is really trying. I know he's got some problems, but he's really trying. Let me help this kid, help him to go to school, or, you know, buy him a cheeseburger or whatever. And you really get to know people, and that will break down this binary and wall that we have between us. And that would, I think that would help to bridge that gap very much.
I got two questions for you. One, is your son at Fairchild Air Force Base?
I'm sorry?
Is your son at Fairchild Air Force Base?
He was at McCord. He's being reassigned, though.
Anyway, and then my other question is, if a police officer buys the kids a cheeseburger, does the department reimburse that officer?
I hope not. Oh. I hope not. Okay.
But anyway, I agree with you.
Yes, I agree very much so. I was going to say that when I was younger, you know, when you're a teenager and stuff, you know, you like you were talking about in school, you hear stories. And so I was a little bit afraid of the cops. I was afraid they were going to, I don't know, I don't do anything wrong, but I was afraid they were going to bust me just for whatever reason. Yeah. And it wasn't until I was older and I actually met some police officers, my sister dated a police officer, and you know, I had to call 911 a few times, and the ones that were nice to me, I was like, oh, okay, cops are okay. And so when you were talking about the community interacting, or the police interacting with the community, I think that is key, really. Having conversations and the police officers, like you said, interacting with the community in a way that's not policing.
Right.
It's huge. It's huge. It's number one. That's we can do that. Police officers could do that today, literally. And within, you know, 6 months, the public would definitely have a different view of them. Now, all the barriers and all the prejudices would not go away overnight, but you would have a different view of the police if you knew that they were going to your church and they were showing up for, they were passing out Halloween candy and giving out Thanksgiving turkeys and all that kind of, your view of them
they
would be
do
so
that?
Hanging out. Yeah.
Do they do that?
I did that. Yeah. I went to I went to our local boys club and I passed out turkeys to the boys club. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dang.
I did that.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of things
really had to do with the vision of the department and our the vision of our department. I know it's Connecticut, but we really did believe in community engagement. I told you about what I did on a Thanksgiving one time. I coached in our Police Activity League. We have community engagement. We shut down the road just this past summer. Well, actually, I was gone. I was retired at the time, but they shut down the road and let the kids come, and they had a bouncy house and passed out hamburgers and cheeseburgers just to get to know your police officer. So that kind of stuff is something that we did, and it is very, very important. That's why when we had, for lack of better terms, controversial shootings and other controversies, when people tried to say it was racist, the two groups that chimed in to defend the police department was our local NAACP chapter and our I forget the name of the organization, but it was the Hispanic Coalition or whatever. Those two groups came to the police department's defense when it tried to put in the paper that in the newspaper that we had done some things wrong. And I was working at this time. And so the more community engagement you have in working with the public, it's especially the minority groups, NAACP and Hispanic coalitions. If you build those coalitions, you know, they will come to your defense. And our department really speaks well and highly of that. Now I'm not saying that we didn't have problems, because we did have problems and things did happen. We had to fire a number of officers for a number of different things. But firing people and taking those disciplinary actions really means something, and they help to turn the public perception around, you know? So
I'm gonna add that to the prayer list. Police coalitions.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I can't think of anything else to add. Like, this has been a very rich, meaty conversation.
Very much so. So I truly thank you guys for coming on. And let's just talk about Fruit Loops for a little bit. You guys are how many episodes in? How many seasons? You guys do seasons, episodes? I'm going backwards, so I'm on.
So we have three seasons.
Okay. Oh, they're going to get worse as you go backwards. Okay. Quality's going to get worse.
But, you know, we have three seasons. We have 90 episodes total, but 71 episodes that are released for free. We have some bonus content. So there's some bonus episodes that we have on our Patreon and Patreon pages. We're pretty committed, so we're gonna keep it going. We're gonna take a little break for the holidays, but we're in it to win it.
So when I first heard about your guys' podcast, I was like, yeah, okay, this is a great idea. About time people are talking about, you know, serial killers, and then I started thinking, wait a minute. How many black serial killers or people?
We get that a lot.
We get that a lot. But the OG is on the line here. She'll tell you there's lots of them.
Okay.
And we keep getting
there's tons of them. We have a whole.
Oh my God!
Yeah, we have a huge list. Huge list.
Okay.
So we have like 4 years worth of.
Yeah, I was going to say we'll be here for a long time.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. I'll be looking and listening, and I have to take a break every now and then because, like I said, I get nightmares. So I. I certainly appreciate what you guys do. I think it's very important. I certainly appreciate you, Beth, for doing this. And bridging the gap, because I think that, you know, as more people think like you and step into that waters, then you get to know people and you get to understand that people are people. If there's everybody always hears about the white serial killers, we all get that. And but if you know that black people have the same amount of problems, and if you tie it into what you guys have to mental health, there's a lot of different things that go in there. And if we realize we get people the mental health that they need, then we can stop a lot of this pain that we're all victims of. Right.
Right. So. Right. Right. Yeah. Hashtag right, be like Beth. Right. Yeah. She's the best white lady I know.
Well, I appreciate that, but I just, I don't think I'm that special. I just think people should treat each other decently, and I don't think that should be special. You know what I mean?
Well, unfortunately, the world is terrible, and it is special. thanks so much for having us on your show. Like,
thank you.
Dope. Thank you. And your show is fantastic. I think you really are really having important conversations that have been eye opening to me as somebody who's terrified of law enforcement. But now I know you, and I don't have to be as scared. Yes. So thank you.
Well, no problem. Yeah. And I'm glad. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Shout out to podcasting, and thanks again for your time.
Thank you so
much. What do I do now?
I'd like to have you guys back on in some time, and we could talk about whatever crazy
stuff.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you so much. And don't get murdered.
Yeah.
All right.
So. Yeah, don't get murdered.
Okay. You either.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
I want to thank my co-hosts, that's what I'm going to call them for this episode, Wendy and Beth from the Fruit Loops Serial Killers of Color podcast for coming on the podcast and taking over Captain Hunter's podcast. Thank you so much to them. I love their energy. I love what they're doing. They have 4 years of content coming up. And just to think in another 4 years, you know, all the information that is going to come in, and we're probably going to learn about more information and more serial killers and all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure that their show will be going on and growing on for quite some time. So I wish them all the best of luck in their endeavors, and make sure that you guys are subscribing, sharing, and liking. Head on over to Venmo, PayPal, or Cash App, or the Patreon page and support Captain Hunter's podcast. Also remember to follow me on Instagram and Twitter and Captain Hunter's podcast on Facebook. As they would say at the end of their show, try not to get murdered. Thank you so much. Much love and peace.